Radio 1, Thursday morning spectrum. Well, what a week in politics it's been. Basically, they've all been bickering about leaking information and emails. Don Brash has been accused of having the Americans on his side and funding and logistical support and even making policy in last year's election. Talk about this. I've got on the line Lyndon Hood, who's a reporter for the Scoop website based in Wellington. Lyndon, can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
Good morning.
G'day.
Now, what do you think about this email debacle from Don Brash?
I do think it's hilarious, but it's kind of the actual content's slightly unexciting, I think. The what we've got so far, although it has to be said that Winston Peters has this habit of playing out any information for as long as he possibly can, and he might be starting at the least interesting stuff, because it's not really evidence of anything very much.
So basically, Don Brash sends this email to a group of senior ministers during the election last year saying, well, we could get this American policy advisor from the Republican Party to come and talk to us, but it'd be really expensive. What do you guys think?
Yeah, that's right. And yesterday afternoon, Winston Peters also tabled and or tried to table another one, which is basically a pitch from a couple of American people that say they weren't hired by a National in the end, and National say they didn't hire them either. So that's kind of unexciting as well. The funniest bit is really the way Don Brash handled it, which was...
Did he say a lot?
I'm sure he did. The embarrassing thing was that he went to this press conference and appeared to have absolutely no idea what he was having a press conference about. He had to get a copy of the email from one of the journalists in order to respond to the contents of this email.
So is this just an indication that he doesn't think it's that important at all? He's just kind of dismissing it by being vague and...
It's possible, but at the same time, looking it over, he went kind of, oh, those Americans, because the...
He does seem to be saying, you know, we possibly may have had American money, don't ask me, ask the president. We did have a few guys, I didn't really meet them, I might have met them at a party after the election.
Yeah, the two things it does call into question, one of them was the extent to which people in the National Administration and Don Brash had denied any American involvement after Labor brought it up. And during the course of this, Don Brash has gone, oh, actually there were a couple of Americans, I just forgot. And the other thing is there's also the separation in National between the funding and the campaigning and the actual politicians was something that Jerry Brownlee,
like,
I think, brought up, said, these are completely distinct. We don't know anything about this, so we couldn't possibly.
That seems strange. I can't imagine in the Labor Party, for example, Helen Clark not having an idea that the British Labor Party was contributing in some way to their campaign.
Yeah, exactly. But here's this email from John Brash going around the political people saying, here are a couple of American campaigners. Do you think we should hire them?
That's right. It doesn't sound like he is acting at great separation from it. The other interesting thing about all this is that, you know, Winston Peters is famous for his kind of tactics and being a great parliamentary practitioner of many years' experience, but he's using it on behalf of the government now.
Mm.
This doesn't usually happen. Usually he's using it against the government.
Yeah,
they must be stoked. The government has got this basically talking monkey that they can just trot out every time anything gets important, and he can just take up space.
Yeah, ever since this confidence and supply thing, he has been in Parliament generally using those same skills that he's honed in opposition and occasional periods of government as providing basically patsy offers for the government to defend themselves against these national attacks. So there's a kind of attack poodle for the government.
Isn't it so strange. I mean, do these guys like each other now? Is this just a marriage of convenience?
I think the thing, Winston probably just enjoys the back and forth of it and the battle, and it doesn't really matter which side he's fighting on.
National's play is, of course, that this is just an attempt by the government to distract attention from last week's announcement about the telecom loop unbundling. I want to talk about that for a while, because this is, seems to me to have come as something of a surprise. You don't often have surprises in politics. I know last year I was involved with the Students' Association. When they came out with the interest-free policy, everyone was gobsmacked. Opposition, people who were in the government just didn't know. They kept an enormous secret, and when we found out, it was like everyone in the country sat up and woke up. That's a bit like what happened last week, don't you think?
A bit. It's fair to say that anyone who didn't think that the policy was coming has been like paying attention, is probably wasn't paying attention, because it was in the speech from the throne that something was going to happen at the beginning of the parliamentary term, when effectively the government announces its policy agenda. Doing something about broadband was right there, and it was pretty obvious that that would at least involve unbundling, or possibly not to this extent. But at the same time, nobody knew that this was going to be announced at the time. It's because
even the government didn't know it was going to be announced at the time.
Yeah, it was signed off and it was immediately leaked to Telecom, and because it was in Telecom's hands, basically the government announced it immediately.
This is the difference between keeping a political promise a secret during an election campaign and keeping a government policy that is being put in, put through all the various. You don't need cabinet support for an election policy. You need the country's support to vote for it. But when you're in government, you do need cabinet support, and the way that the cabinet is set up at the moment doesn't seem like they can plug all the leaks.
Yeah, well, Telecom. So yeah, the biggest company on the stock exchange, I believe, and obviously it's possible. God knows what people were thinking. It's faintly possible that somebody thought that they were supposed to do that to keep, as a consultation thing, that it had somehow maybe been gotten out earlier as something cabinet was considering.
Well, because sometimes parties are in power deliberately leak things. Mm. This doesn't seem to be the case in this.
This is almost certainly not one of those times. There's not really any benefit in having the uncontrolled release of this information, as it's quite clearly happened. The only material benefit that anyone's come up with that I can think of, the opposition's tried to imply that possibly the minister, Damien O'Connor, has been on the front pages rather a lot, isn't that interesting, but really you could try and sell futures in the shares if you had this information, insider trading kind of stuff. But Telecom obviously were diligent enough not to let that happen, and I think it would be pretty obvious if you tried it.
So it's
still quite a mystery.
And National Party's response is quite interesting. I mean, there's been several occasions in the last few weeks where someone from the National Party has just come out saying something. For instance, we had Jerry Brownlee saying that National was going to perhaps change its stance on the Māori seats. Mm. And then we had, after this announcement that Telecom, the local loop, was going to be unbundled, Maurice Williamson came out, and I understand you interviewed him, completely against this, said it was a crap idea, basically.
Yeah.
for New Zealand. And then, you know, less than a day later, Don Brash has to take that back. It doesn't seem like they've got a very good coordination going on.
Well, it's not as if they were particularly solid during the election campaign either. It has to be said with on things like the West Coast logging, where they couldn't actually get their local candidate into line over that. And their transport policy was a complete shambles. There are at least, I think, five or so issues where they were, like, announcing inconsistent policies from Brash and the minister or local people or whatever. It just never quite came together.
One thing they are singing from the same song sheet on is John Key and Don Brash alike is tax cuts. Next week, New Zealand's budget is being announced. Australia announced their budget yesterday, and there have been heavily kind of across the board, John Howard and Peter Costello have offered the Australian people, they've offered to buy them off, those at the bottom and those at the top especially, not so much those in the middle. And this has led Don Brash today to give the lead story. This has taken the story about American involvement in the election off the front page. Do you think that Michael Cullen is... Because last year we had a budget where Michael Cullen basically fluffed it, and they spent the rest of the year, and probably the start of this year, recovering from that. Is Michael Cullen under more pressure to provide more tax cuts?
I don't think they could change anything at this point. I don't think apart from the parliamentary people, the opposition and so on, I don't think anyone would expect them to, in response to this, change a budget in the last week, especially with something as huge as taxation, right?
Because they've been saying, you know, Australia's better off for ages, and this is just kind of more proof for the national case.
Yeah, and the recent immigration statistics have once again shown that we're losing people to Australia faster than they come in from everywhere else. But the actual taxation rates is kind of peripheral to that. If you look at the difference in salary, and even like the change in tax rate isn't really significant compared to the fact that you just go to Australia and get paid a lot more.
Yeah, heaps. And I suppose there's nothing in the short term that either party could do to change that. I suppose... So it's kind of a sleeper issue.
I mean, it's something that's good for the opposition party, whoever you are. But, I mean, to my mind, I don't... The government committed to trying to get us into the top half of the OECD a couple of terms ago, I think it was. And we, you know, I haven't been doing well on that track. And we're not ever really going to be a bigger economy than Australia. To my mind, I think if you want to attract and keep people, then we're going to have to go for the quality of life issues, in which we do beat Australia, strangely, even though it's kind of cooler over here.
So what can we expect from the budget next week? They've been drip-feeding pre-budget announcements. The Telecom, of course. Telecom unbundling was an unwanted pre-budget announcement. That was their egg. It's been broken. Have they got anything left in the basket?
Oh, there's always going to be something. There was definitely a... would have been, I imagine, the headliner of the budget, and certainly... I haven't seen anything pretending that this budget is going to be hugely exciting. That aside, the relevant ministers really have been drip-feeding out information, things like the family violence thing that's been in the news ever so slightly the last couple of days, a bit more funding for family violence prevention.
Yeah, I've got a list here, biosecurity measures, they're looking at expanding the National Library and they're going to put some money towards that. The Parliamentary Commissioner for the Environment is getting more funding.
That's right, environment education.
That's right, the Greens are claiming for that. So basically, you know, what do political parties stand to gain in government? You know, the Greens, who are not actually in government, United Future, do you reckon they're going to get anything out of this budget?
Ah, that would have to be the they've kind of had a little bit already in the financial end with odd taxation reviews and things like that, looking at business taxes and so on. Whether there'll be something final in the budget, it may already technically have been announced somewhere so long ago that one forgets. But there's that.
I suppose that if you're a Labor supporter, all you could hope for is some news to come out, as does from time to time, that it doesn't look quite as bad. You know, the government has this habit of finding pots of money.
Yeah.
They just kind of turn up and go, oh, look, we've got several billion dollars that we didn't account for. How about that? And that is nothing if not a good news story.
Oh, that's true. The pots of money seem to turn up more often in election years for some reason.
Well, they also turn up at budget time.
Yeah.
So what do you think the likelihood of that is happening? I know you're not an economist.
No.
But it's not so much about economics. It's kind of about spinning and
yeah,
changing the descriptions of your figures, your budget surpluses.
It's true that the last government accounts that came out were a good long way ahead of predictions. They always are. Treasury's quite conservative when it makes its predictions. So there probably is a bunch of money kicking around. Whether Cullen has this habit of spending it on the things like the superannuation and infrastructure, which kind of goes outside the current accounts. So, which leads to all the arguments about what counts as a surplus and what doesn't, and what we can spend.
His style. So basically, to sum it up, next week's going to be pretty boring budget-wise, but we hope that Winston Peters will add a bit of life by releasing some more juicy information about
the budget. You know, they haven't foreshadowed any excitement in the budget, but after last time they might have learned their lesson and decided never ever to foreshadow any deep dark secrets in the budget again.
Well, everyone knows that the economy's on the way down and not that much money to spend. Essentially, we ain't lucky like the lucky country. I can't believe that they have no debt. Do they really have no debt in Australia?
Well, we've just moved into the black, I believe, with the overall government accounts. We still have foreign debt, but the money that we have in things like the super fund, I suppose, actually is more than that.
Really?
Yeah, apparently. I'm not sure how long we'll keep that up for, but there was an announcement about that.
Oh, so we're in Australia, at least in one measure, on a par.
Yeah, that's right.
Anyway, it's been good to talk to you, Lyndon. Lyndon, you're an ex-critic technical editor, of course, down here at the local student magazine.
That's right.
And what are you doing now? You're working for the Scoop website?
Mm-hmm. Just keeping the thing running, feeding up press releases into the machine and writing the occasional little satirical biting piece.
Oh, there you go. And for students at home sitting there in their cold flats not really wanting to do any work, they could go to your website. What is it?
That's right, www.scoop.co.nz. In fact, if you look at it in the next few days, you can read about how you can win a Powerball to exercise your wrists with.
Oh, that's for rock climbers, eh? They need strong wrists.
That's right.
Climb up walls. Well, maybe there's some rock climbers out there. Thanks very much. Hopefully we'll talk to you again on the slows or not so slow news weeks. And you have a good rest of your day.
Righto, thanks, Dave.
See you later.
Bye.